Case number 12-7091, Michael J. Gredman, appellant versus Stephen R. Perlis, et al. Ms. Miller for the appellant, Ms. Mew for the appellees.
Ms. Miller, good morning, or good afternoon.
Good morning, Your Honors. I should say good afternoon. I was following your lead, Judge Henderson. I think I'm thinking the case should have been done a week ago and in the morning, so. May it please the court. The district court erred in dismissing appellant Bregman's unjust enrichment claim as time barred under the statute of limitations by setting the accrual date before there was an unequivocal refusal of payment by the three appellees. The deciding question, as we all know, is when compensation was wrongfully withheld from my client, Mr. Bregman, giving rise to a duty by the appellees to pay, preventing their unjust enrichment. And in setting the accrual date here, in failing to set the proper accrual date here, the court erred and dismissed his claim as time barred. The court, this particular court here, in News World Communications versus Thompson, set forth the law in 2005, and it was followed by the court in 2009 in Villa. The statute of limitations begins to run when two things happen. One, the last service has been rendered. Here in this case, my client's last service to the appellees as his consultant in this contingent litigation was in June of 2004. Second prong, when compensation is wrongfully withheld. Here we assert that compensation was wrongfully withheld when the defendants received payment from the contingent fee litigation that my client worked to support.
And your authority for that was a Colorado Court of Appeals case.
Sir, we believe that the Colorado Court of Appeals case in Hannon is instructive. But our position, as we argued on our briefs, is that the court in Thompson set forth the law in this circuit. Yeah. Here, the law is that two-prong test, when services are last rendered and when compensation is wrongfully withheld.
Maybe I remember, but Thompson's actually not a decision of our court, right? It's the local court. Am I wrong on that? Nevertheless, it is the law that governs this case, yeah.
Yes, Your Honor. And the Colorado case, we believe, is instructive because it is the only contingent fee case where an unjust enrichment claim was filed and the statute of limitations accrual date was at issue, the only case we could find where we had similar analogous facts. And all in the Hannon case, that case involved lawyers, right, and arguing over when an attorney fee split which should be paid. It's instructive here because of the contingent nature of the compensation. In the Hannon case, the defendants argued that the claim accrued when one of the three lawyers withdrew from the representation because of disagreements among counsel. The attorney who felt that he was who brought the unjust enrichment claim filed that case within 3 years of when actual payment was made. The contingency actually accrued.
But the key difference is in Hannon, there was no refusal of payment beforehand. That's what we have here. In my mind, your greatest stumbling block is this letter of September 25th that clearly states you're not going to get paid because you didn't do the work. And so in that way, I mean, first of all, with all due respect to the Colorado Court of Appeals, that they're not us. The Thompson case, because we're in diversity, the Thompson case applies to us. And Thompson seemed to think that the fact that payment was going to come later was not a significant issue. In Hannon, you don't have a refusal beforehand the way you do here. So how do you get around this September letter, which seems on its face to be a pretty stark refusal to pay?
Well, the Hannon letter, we argue, the 25th of September 2008 mm-hmm. letter that the district court below rested his decision on, we argue is one piece of correspondence, and it mm-hmm. should not and could not really, in deciding this equitable claim and the accrual date, be taken solely out of context. And even if you look at the language in that letter, we argue that there was no clear and unequivocal refusal there.
So, let me read for you the sentence I'm looking at in the first complete paragraph. There is no basis whatsoever for Mr. Bregman's claim to any of the settlement proceeds from the LaBelle case. That reminds me, Judge Santel is frequently quoting wonderful country ballads. It reminds me of the one, what part of no don't you understand? Right? I mean.
Well, yes, Your Honor. However, that is the first sentence, which is followed by several other sentences, as I know you've read. Here, the letter, even the title of the letter, says for settlement purposes only. This September the 25th letter was written in response to a September the 9th letter. Right? And that September the 9th letter is at the joint appendix. On page 45 of the joint appendix. And in that letter, it was written to all three of the defendants, and it requested not payment, Your Honor, but a confirmation of payment. So here, this was 4 years after the date of last service was rendered, and you know my client at that time certainly wanted confirmation. Wanted that warm fuzzy. That's why he hired a lawyer. He wanted confirmation that he would be paid when the contingency occurred here, when they got paid.
But then what he got was a letter that said you're not going to be. But the words that Judge Griffith just read to you seem pretty plain. Okay, this is what we're responding to. I'm not sure where you're going by telling us to ask the question, because there's more things you can be asking.
Your Honor, there are lots of reasons why my client did not consider this, and it should not be considered. This letter of September the 25th should not be considered a clear and unequivocal refusal. First of all, it's entitled for settlement purposes, which squarely implies payment and resolution are possible. Second, he asked for documentation of work performed. Mr. Perlis's attorney asked for documentation. So certainly there's lots of posturing language here. There's even an acknowledgement that we believe that is very, very important here at the very end, which said, and oh, by the way, as a final matter, be aware no funds have been received. And so what we suggest, Your Honor, is that this is why the Colorado case in hand is instructive, simply because the Thompson case didn't at all deal with any kind of contingent compensation in terms of setting the accrual date. Mm-hmm. We think that the holding in Hannon is important because if you look at the intentions, the expectations, and the behaviors of all the parties, it helps you to determine when money was wrongfully withheld. Yes,
would
sir.
Would it be any different as a matter of law if the words for settlement purposes only did not appear at the top of that letter?
Sir, we are arguing that that is just one sentence in a letter.
If those words were not there, would that matter?
We would still argue this was not an unequivocal refusal to pay. We think that you just shouldn't look at one letter or one sentence.
To be what they are, with or without, for settlement purposes only.
Yes.
I mean, we've all practiced law. We all put that kind of language on top of all kinds of things. That doesn't really seem to change anything, does it?
Well, neither does the rest of the posturing language here. So, for example, you see posturing language. Mr. Perlis is shocked that Mr. Bregman would assert a claim without providing one shred of documentation. That's on the second page.
Didn't you all acknowledge in the district court that this was a rejection? My notes show here a rejection in writing of Mr. Bregman's demands for compensation. And you recognize that at the district court. So, well,
the letter on its face certainly says, we're rejecting your request for confirmation of payment. We want more information, but it was certainly not clear and unequivocal or final, that we believe should set the accrual date here. Mm-hmm. And we know that the court in Thompson even acknowledged that these issues are not free of difficulty. We know that it is not easy to determine the accrual date in an unjust enrichment claim. And that's why we think the Hannon case is really helpful here, because in that contingent fee case, the court held there that an unjust enrichment claim accrues when recovery occurs in underlying litigation. Here, the court in Thompson considered and actually described a number of factors that should be considered in analyzing claims for unjust enrichment. Because as you know, that in the Thompson case, this was the first time the circuit actually decided this question of the accrual date of unjust enrichment claim.
That was not our case. It was the District of Columbia Court of Appeals. And we often get each other's mail, but that's a different court. But, But you're
but
right.
We all agree that it is controlling.
We're in diversity, and that's the law of the District of Columbia.
Yes, that's Your Honor, right. And I apologize for misstating in my mind that that's
sorry,
the law that applies
it's
here.
It's common.
Okay. But here, in the Thompson case, the court said, talked about, gave us a lot of reasons why quantum merit and accrual dates and how to determine those issues. In other words, it's not that we know that it's not the plaintiff's expectancy of payment, but it's important that you determine by looking at all the surrounding facts and circumstances when the plaintiff actually, when the defendants were actually unjustly enriched, or were all the elements present so that the plaintiff could maintain a successful suit. That's at the Thompson case at pages 1222 to 23. And so here, we argue that as an additional point that at that time, on September the 25th, all the elements were not present so that a successful unjust enrichment claim could be made because there was no money. Without enrichment, without money having been paid to the appellees, my client would never have had a claim. So this is why we assert that it wasn't until money was paid on September the 17th, 2008, and later withheld in a trust agreement on September the 19th of 2008, that is when we had an unequivocal rejection and certainly the accrual of his claim.
I think you can bring an unjust enrichment once the defendant gets the benefit of it. In other words, if you hired someone to do some work, and that person did the work, and you said, I have no money, I'm sorry, I'm dead broke, that doesn't mean he can't bring an unjust enrichment claim. So the fact that there wasn't any money yet, I don't think is that critical. And I did want to ask you, your time is up, but I wanted to ask you, would you consider the sentence, the last sentence in the top paragraph of page 2, to be posturing when the lawyer says, Mr. Bregman should be aware that if he insists on pursuing his frivolous claim in court, Mr. Pearls will fully defend the bad faith claim and will seek appropriate sanctions. I mean, that's a pretty clear warning that they're not going to give him anything.
Well, Your Honor, we also suggest that in addition to that posturing language, there's all kinds of posturing language here. And we might add that, and I know my time is up, but Mr. Pearls was the only author of this letter, and certainly the September the 9th letter was addressed to all three of them. So there are lots of reasons why here that language, is among posturing, including other language, was not a clear and unequivocal refusal because they requested additional information from my client, even on this letter.
All right. We'll give you a couple minutes to reply. Ms. Mew?
Thank you. Good afternoon. May it please the Court. I am arguing this afternoon on behalf of both Colonel Schwartz and Mr. Tom Fay. To address the September 25th letter, we do agree that the district court properly dismissed Mr. Bregman's claims as barred by the three-year statute of limitations based on the clear and unequivocal refusal communicated
to... Then why did they ask for documentation? What was that about?
Mr. Perlis's attorney, I guess, asked for documentation, and I guess we could speculate what he's going to. I think that perhaps he was concerned that Mr. Bregman and his attorney would bring forward such a claim, the strongly asserted claim brought in the September 9th, 2008 letter without any proof. But it certainly does
well, I mean,
not...
If you say you have no claim, I'm not going to give you any money... That should be the end of the matter, right? Unless you're not saying that's the end of the matter.
Well, no, I think they are saying it's the end of the matter, but I think they said, in addition, not only do your claims not have any merit, but you also have offered no proof. So I think that it's just reemphasizing and reasserting that.
It's a challenge. You don't have any records, and if you have any records, bring them forth.
Sure, show us your hand, but it doesn't mean that on the basis of what we've seen that we've made any different decision here. We are rejecting your claim. There is no basis whatsoever to his claim for settlement proceeds. And certainly he wouldn't need any records. He was part of the services that were allegedly provided and was part of the relationship, so he didn't need to see anything. He knew at this point that he was denying the claim. And I would point out, Your Honor, you mentioned the representation made at the district court level. It's on appendix page JA56. While the defendant certainly rejected in writing Mr. Bregman's demands for compensation for his services in that correspondence. That was in Mr. Bregman's opposition to Mr. Cornell Schwartz's motion to dismiss. So it certainly was conceded below, and the only argument made at that time was that the enrichment had not occurred yet. Mr. Bregman's argument that was that it was not until the contingency fee funds were received in November of 2008 that the enrichment had occurred. But that's not correct. It's a matter of law. As seen in the District of Columbia Court of Appeals decision in the Thompson matter, the benefit of the services that Mr. Bregman allegedly provided accrued not sometime in the future when and if the contingency fee funds came in. The benefit came from the value of his services at the time they were provided, if they were in fact provided. It was certainly seen in the Times case where Mrs. Thompson had given ideas to the newspaper. The newspaper used the ideas, began to act on them, and the cause of action did not accrue 2 years later when the newspaper was finally published. It accrued at the time the services were provided on an unjust enrichment claim. Mr. Bregman also referenced sort of the entire series of correspondence between the parties, and we would certainly draw the court's attention as well to the September 9th, 2008 letter from Mr. Bregman's counsel, which is on page 45 of the joint appendix. At that time, Mr. Bregman came forward and, through counsel, asserted a claim for payment based on his work that he allegedly performed in the Beecham litigation matter. At that time, he presumably felt that he had a strong enough claim based on the facts at that time to assert a lien and to come forward and to assert this claim. And I don't think he goes storming around hiring an attorney to write a letter like this to other parties without a belief that you have a claim. And in fact, in the district court below, at oral argument, Mr. Bregman's counsel conceded that he could have brought a claim at that time, and he didn't. The statute of limitations does not continue to run on this claim until the payment comes in the future. It's not a case like Hannon, and recognizing already that this Hannon decision is from the Colorado Court of Appeals that Mr. Bregman's relying on. It is not the situation in Hannon. Mr. Bregman was not part of a contingency fee arrangement with the plaintiffs in the Beecham litigation. He does not allege as much. He had no contingency fee arrangement with Mr. Fay or Colonel Schwartz. The case is not apposite, in addition to just not being applicable precedent here. I did also want to touch upon the alternate basis upon which the court could affirm the district court's decision below. In addition to the very clear statute of limitations issue here, as appellees argued below and as we reaffirm here on appeal, Mr. Bregman has utterly failed to state a claim for unjust enrichment against Mr. Fay and Colonel Schwartz. And there are really two issues for this problem. Unjust enrichment occurs when the plaintiff confers a benefit on the defendant. The defendant retains the benefit, and under the circumstances, retention of the benefit would be unjust. This is a personal services type of arrangement, and Mr. Bregman's complaint is empty of any allegations, really specifying any kind of benefit that he provided to Mr. Fay or Colonel Schwartz in this matter. He was brought in to help Mr. Perlis, he alleges. He was performing services at Mr. Perlis's behalf. His expectation was that he would be compensated by Mr. Perlis. There's no allegation of any direct benefit to Colonel Schwartz or to Mr. Fay or any expectation on Mr. Bregman's part that they would compensate him for any service he provided. This is touched upon in the D.C. Court of Appeals opinion in Bloom Garden, which also addresses the personal services context. To have unjust enrichment, the recipient of the services must know or have reasonable grounds to believe that the beneficial acts were performed in anticipation of remuneration. Here, there would be no basis for Colonel Schwartz to believe that Mr. Bregman expected any kind of payment for him for his services for Mr. Perlis. He wasn't under any kind of an agreement with him. He hadn't had any interactions with him. There's only one paragraph in the complaint where Mr. Bregman alleges he met with Colonel Schwartz, and that was in an office and on some undisclosed topic. Similar for Mr. Fay, there was no expectation, none alleged in the complaint by Mr. Bregman, that he expected payment from Mr. Fay. Instead, what happens is Mr. Bregman alleges that Mr. Perlis failed to pay him in accordance with their agreed oral contract. That does not make any benefit supposedly accruing to Mr. Fay or Colonel Schwartz unjust. It's not unjust just because Mr. Bregman was not paid by this third party. And this was exactly the situation addressed by the District of Columbia Court of Appeals in the Jordan Keys case. In that case, the plaintiff, Jordan Keys, was a law firm performing services for the Greater Southeast Community Hospital in Washington, D.C., under contract. But St. Paul, the defendant in that case, was an excess insurer, and so was involved in that representation, actually helped direct some of the work that Jordan Keys did, and eventually, after the hospital went bankrupt, St. Paul, the defendant, received work product from Jordan Keys, got the value of the services, a benefit from the services that Jordan Keys was providing to the hospital, and Jordan Keys tried to recoup from the insurance company after the hospital went bankrupt and was unable to pay. The District of Columbia said, the Court of Appeals said, no, there's no unjust enrichment here. Simply because the third party was not able to pay Jordan Keys does not mean that St. Paul Insurance Company has to do so. There's nothing unjust about that. The circumstances were exactly the same as they would have been if the hospital had paid. So that does not make the enrichment unjust. And we think that the facts of this case are very similar to what was before the court in Jordan Keys, and that was also on a motion to dismiss, and that would be an alternative basis to affirm the district court's opinion.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Miller's out of town. All right. Why don't you take a minute?
Your Honor, counsel does a very poor job in explaining away the September the 23rd letter. It's claiming that her client didn't need to see anything because he knew that Bregman hadn't done any work for him. Well, thing speaks for itself. If that was the case, he wouldn't have asked for additional documentation. We suggest that the additional documentation request was and all the additional later communications were clearly led my client to believe that payment for his services and the request for confirmation of payment for his services was not a done deal. So September the 23rd, that September the 23rd letter, while it was filled with rejections, was not a clear and unequivocal refusal because, like the case in Thompson, when Ms. Thompson was told that her ideas were not novel and she would not be paid for them, it was under circumstances in which the retention of the benefit of her services would have been unjust. So it's not only the clear and unequivocal refusal, but it's under circumstances when retaining that benefit is unjust. There, they had the benefit of her services, she'd done the work, and they told her she was going to be paid. In our case, the contingent nature of that case was our client had done the work 4 years ago, but there was no wrongful withholding of money because there wasn't any money to withhold. You have an opportunity to ensure that there's no injustice in this case and to hold all three defendants liable for their claims for unjust enrichment because they shared in a contingent fee that was based on the value of his work, which is pled in the complaint sufficiently, sir and ma'am, for her notice pleading, for sure. So here, the circumstances under which that letter was stated were not a clear and unequivocal rejection under circumstances that would lead to a wrongful withholding, because there was nothing to withhold. We simply think it cannot hold, it cannot stand here, that a $111 million payment, some month and a half later, that our client received no benefit of for his 2.5 years of work, would not be relevant in an unjust enrichment claim, when that was, in fact, a clear and unequivocal rejection. That agreement, where all three of the defendants said, we're not going to pay you, that was the unequivocal rejection, and certainly that came even after all this posturing language. So we ask you to look at the surrounding circumstances and the realities of how lawyers work. We all posture and talk. But in this particular case, my client had no reason to believe that September the
23rd. You didn't believe this letter because it came from a lawyer?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
I appreciate your indulgence.